Welcome to East Meets West, episode 109. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
What are we going to talk about, Roger?
I don't know. We could talk about lots of wintry weather.
Wintry weather? Where? Not here. Not in the Bay Area.
No. Although it was
not
pretty chilly. It was pretty chilly last night. Yeah, South by Southwest.
South by Southwest. I've been enjoying South by Southwest via Twitter. I am not yet in Austin.
How can you enjoy it via
Twitter?
Just
like watch the kids talking about the parties that they're
going
to. How
do you enjoy that, though?
I enjoy watching that.
What have you watched? You haven't watched anything. You just read people's...
That's why I said via.
What do you mean, like, you could even
it's
really...
It's like when my grandparents enjoyed, you know, watching the kids play across the street because it made them feel young inside.
So you enjoyed that?
They did.
Well, but how would you extrapolate or...
No, I said it was like that. Like, my... Jeez, Roger, do I have to explain everything?
Yes, you
my
do.
My enjoyment of South by Southwest is similar to... It's like an SAT test. Their enjoyment of the kids across the street.
Sure.
Well, okay. You brought up South by Southwest.
It's nothing against it. I'm just asking, how do you enjoy it through someone else's Twitter?
I enjoy the Twitters. What is so hard to understand?
Whatever. Why don't you go read a men's bathroom wall?
Actually, I'm going to go to South by Southwest tomorrow
yes,
morning.
You
I'm going to fly out there because I have a panel to do on Monday afternoon.
What's this panel on Monday afternoon?
It's called Online Adulation. Use, Don't Abuse Your Fans. It's trying to tell people like how to be nice to their fans and then how to deal with the fans that aren't nice to you, essentially.
Interesting object lesson. So what are your object lessons?
The object lessons will mostly come from the panelists. Casey McKinnon of Galacticast, Heather Armstrong, Deuce, and Chris Smith of Snowman Hunters will be on there. Of course, I'm describing them by the things I know them. They are of like 8-bit brownies for Casey and Heather Armstrong Limited for Heather and Zanzibar 19 for Chris.
Zanzibar 19?
That's the name of the
podcast.
The production company that does Snowman Hunters. Did Snowman Hunters, now gone. But anyway, yeah, they've got lots of examples of ways they've dealt with people and cases, case studies and things like that.
Yeah, no, I've been just working, so I really haven't had time to enjoy anything actually from South by South.
How would you enjoy it?
Exactly. I couldn't unless I was there, which I won't be, so I'm not going to talk about it anymore. Happy?
No.
Oh, Hugo Chavez in Colombia.
The almost war in South
almost
America.
Almost war. It's
yeah.
the... an altercation, a conflagration.
I mean, as much as you hear about South America and troubles in South America, you generally just stereotype them as coups and internal problems. You almost never think about the countries in South America attacking each other.
But they have, and quite often. In fact, the past 30 years, there have been numerous either
skirmishes,
border wars, either in Central or South America. And it's very interesting because...
it's not like it's a powder keg or anything, but...
It can be. It just depends on how it's...
It can be a powder keg
what?
If someone adds powder.
Oh,
no, I'm just saying, like, it's not... I know what you're saying, which is it could turn into a powder
yes.
keg. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I didn't say it was. I said it could be.
Yeah, I know.
Just like I was asking
you... started
you
picking nits with me, and now I'm doing it.
Picking nits. I just said, how can you enjoy something through a Twitter?
Let's
you
not revisit that. That's boring.
All right.
Anyway.
Any case.
South America.
So
we were almost about to talk about something interesting.
Yes.
And
you know,
this,
Colombia went into, what do I keep calling it? Escobar. It's
Ecuador.
Sorry, Colombia.
Well, there's the whole Pablo Escobar thing in your head.
In Ecuador, on the trail of FARC.
The website, but the guerrillas.
The guerrillas.
And not the apes, but the fighters.
Yes, the ones that have been... that have been having on and off again relationship with that with the Colombians for the better part of 20 years.
Yeah.
So. And it's interesting because it was Hugo Chavez that made kind of the saber rattling, like, you know, he mobilized troops, even though it wasn't into his country.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me all that much. I mean,
I don't think
it
surprised
me. It was unexpected, but yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
Well, his own popularity back home has been somewhat diminished due to recent increases in food as well as increase in crime and a bunch of other quality of life issues that a lot of people have not been too happy about.
Well, true colors of Hugo Chavez have begun to show over the past few years. I mean, he started out as an idealist, man of the people,
you know,
leftist.
I don't think it was. I think he was more like. And the thing is, I don't think he's really changed. I think he's just changed tactics. I agree. I don't think he's changed.
But yeah. I think some things that he was able to sort of shuffle under the rug before, he isn't able to hide as easily. And maybe you're right. Maybe it's because he's had to change tactics that he can't hide those things.
Well, it's interesting because supposedly the Colombians found on the laptops from the ones they took from the guerrillas information, or at least data, linking Chavez funding FARC to the tune of $200,000 or $300,000 or something.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, not pocket change.
Well, and that's probably one of the reasons he got up in arms, literally.
Well, some of the analysts believe that he was just basically, oh, well, they found the laptops or they found the data. I better get ready just in case they do something.
Yeah, preemptive move.
So, and, you know, Brazil, Chile, and Argentina, Mexico, or was it just Chile, Brazil, Mexico, have been offering to mediate, and they've been trying to working through the OAS, the Organization of American States.
Mm-hmm.
In Washington to help diffuse a potential crisis.
Yeah, it seems like they've started to talk today.
Well,
being Saturday,
and it's hard because especially for the Colombians, you know, who've been the thing is the Colombians have had to deal with this particular group for a great many number of years. And it's not as clear cut, and I kind of wince when they put, you know, left-wing rebels, right-wing paramilitary. In the end, it's all just violence and kidnapping for the average Colombian.
That left-wing and right-wing, we've talked about that in relation to Russia before and the Soviet Union and how it's a shortcut for reporting. It doesn't always have a very solid meaning that's transferable from one situation to another.
And, you know, the thing is, it's just, you know, you essentially have what used to be a militant political movement turned into essentially its own kind of self-governing political organization that works outside of the Colombian, you know, I guess, levers of power. So essentially, you know, they pay for a lot of things through ransom, cocaine shipment. I'm not sure if they actually grow it or if they just distribute it. But they, you know, they're the classic quote-unquote narco-terrorists. In that they get a lot of their funding through selling cocaine and other. I think cocaine is probably the only narcotic they sell.
So what do you do with your weekend, Roger? Do you do you enjoy ocean sports? Do you enjoy waterboarding?
Oh, I think it's knee boarding actually. Why do you ask, Tom?
Well, yeah, you saw that President Bush. I don't know if he actually vetoed it yet. But
which
he
one?
Said he was going to veto the ban on waterboarding.
Interesting.
Which I actually think is already not in the guidelines,
it's
U.S. Army
not.
Interrogation guidelines. So it's, I guess it's a way of Congress making a statement, making it a very firm, making it the law of the land.
The thing is, waterboarding has always been kind of a gray area because
You mean going back to the witch trials in Salem?
Well, so you know what they do, right? Isn't it what they
dunk you in the water and
they make you essentially
same sort of thing.
Yeah,
you dunk you in the water to admit you're a witch,
or to admit to something, anything.
Anything to get them to stop dunking you in the water. Yeah, I don't know. You don't have much of an opinion on it, one way or another.
I don't know. People are gonna do what they're gonna do.
It makes me think of surfing.
Why?
Waterboarding. I think it's some kind of water park activity.
I don't know.
And it's not. It's not very fun.
I don't know. I always thought there had to be a better way to torture someone to give them information besides that.
So you believe in torturing people to give them get information?
Do I believe in it? I believe it's done.
No, do you believe it should be done?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
I am anti-torture.
The thing is,
I can easily say that.
I don't know. I mean, like, the thing is, personally, if someone's, for example, if I had children and someone snagged them, like, you know, and someone who did know wouldn't say anything, I would resort to violence to beat it out of them.
You would as the parent, but do you think that that should be the case as an objective, you know, handler? I mean, you're not objective when you're the parent. That's why we don't allow the parents to be the judges in the cases of their own children, of crimes against their own children.
They can be witnesses, though.
Well, sure.
Actually, you can't be judge in any crime. You actually need to go to a judge.
Yeah,
judge.
You need an objective judge. That's kind of my point.
I don't know. On the fence, honestly. I cannot say one way or the other. So you can write in there, Roger supports torturing.
Roger likes torture. Roger doesn't know whether Roger likes torture or not.
Roger has a bunch of car batteries in the trunk just for such an emergency.
And a bag of oranges.
Oranges.
I am very seriously against torture, so I don't like the whole waterboarding thing at all. But you can have an intellectual discussion about whether waterboarding is torture, I suppose. But
yeah. Well, but they also it's interesting because they also sleep deprivation is also considered. It's grown from the classic, you know, cut the fingers off, you know, a person, to more like, you know, if you sleep deprivation, if you played loud music while they're asleep, that's considered torture. Leaving lights on 24/7 is considered torture.
Wow. So my roommate in college was torturing me.
Yeah.
Because he left the lights on all the time.
I mean, it's the thing is anything that causes discomfort over a great many. I mean, the thing is at some point you could also include, I mean, you include detention in that too.
Well, yeah, if you go far enough, actually imprisoning someone could, you know.
Oh, imprison.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
So for me, it's, you know, I don't know. It's. I am probably the least qualified person to make a judgment call on that.
On torture?
No, I mean on things like what you consider to be torture, like think you know like I just like leaving loud music, lights on, long term imprisonment.
George Washington was anti-torture, so I have read.
Okay.
He didn't allow the torturing of British soldiers that were captured during the Revolutionary War.
Hmm.
He fed them and kept them dry, whereas the British did not. The British would torture and kill and hang as examples American soldiers, mm-hmm. U.S. colonial soldiers.
Actually, there's a really good book I've always been meaning to pick up that actually did a comparison between the American Revolutionary War and the British experience with the American experience in Vietnam. And it draws some very interesting parallels. One, you know, you're dealing with a far-flung nation. You know, second of all, you're fighting in essentially inhospitable terrain against a guerrilla army.
Supposedly the VC weren't tortured if they were captured either, but I don't know.
It depends. I mean, the thing is, the VC weren't a part of the, or at least politically, they weren't part of the North Vietnamese government.
Mm-hmm.
They were considered guerrillas in South Vietnam.
William F. Buckley passed away.
Yes, I heard about that. Well, that's like the only one left, huh?
The only one? The only one of what?
The only intelligible intellectual on the conservative talk.
The only popular one.
Well, the thing is because
I mean there are definitely intellectual.
He was articulate.
Yeah.
He was definitely smart. He wasn't in boorish in the way that Rush Limbaugh is.
No, not at all. I mean, and he, you know, he famously went out into international waters and smoked pot, you know, because he thought it should be legalized. Yeah. And you know, he was an intellectual. He took Rush Limbaugh and those guys to task, as I remember, on a couple of occasions.
Oh no, yeah, he's taken the party, the Republican Party, on numerous occasions. The thing is, William F. Buckley has always leaned more libertarian than what people consider.
We founded the National Review, which is still going.
Yeah,
and there's still some good writers at the National Review.
The thing is, like the. At his time, when he became, the whole kind of concept of religiosity
in conservatism
were, I mean, it wasn't until the 80s until you had like Reagan and you know, you kind of had this blending of the two. Before it was more like, you know, you had a bunch of eggheads who believed in, you know, calculating numbers, finances, you
right.
know, things that dealt with money.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was more of, you know, the social mores and all that stuff came out.
Does that leave George Will as the at least most popular conservative pundit then?
I think the only, maybe the only, maybe the only one that would probably have a good chance of debating anything.
Yeah.
In an intelligent and non, like, you know, your poo-poo head, you know.
Yeah, right. Just name calling.
Like,
heads.
What's her name? Ann Coulter. She's a, like, she's a prime example of an idiot who shouldn't, like, discuss things because the way she, maybe her writing's different. Then again, I've read it, so maybe
well,
not.
I don't know. I don't know if Rush Limbaugh, Ann Coulter, and several of those so-called conservative talk show hosts and pundits are intellectual or not because they don't show it.
No.
They prefer to do stunts, you know, and to do things to gain attention and to do things to make a point. Then I don't hear all that. I mean, maybe a little bit more from Rush than any of them, frankly, of any kind of intellectual discussion.
I mean, I've heard a couple of, you know, nuggets here and there, but for the most part, it was just a lot of blah this, blah that, and it was it's only when he actually got into a decent descent, and I don't see the thing is this is before his whole addiction to painkillers,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if that somehow has affected his performance since because I don't really listen to him.
Shall we go to the comments then?
Oh, sure, Tom. Why not? You're going to be flying out to Austin enjoying food, barbecue, movies, music.
Tex-Mex, man. Give me some migas. Richard pointed out that CNET.com was in the ID3 tags. I guess that was because I was using Audacity to record Buzz Out Loud at one point and then forgot
to change the... Nice plug. Why don't
you
put Revision 3 in there, too?
All right, I will. Joe says, I'm sorry, Tom. I actually wasn't ranting against you. Joe, it's okay. I didn't really take it personally. I read another listener's comment and got to thinking about opinions, and that inspired the rant. I'm sorry if I sounded mean. You didn't. It certainly wasn't intended that way. I truly enjoy listening to both of your great show. Well, thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Richard also says, I was curious if anyone identifying with the comments about the lack of enthusiasm on the part of employees seems to be to trend generationally, most notably amongst Generation Y. This brought to mind an article I read about the efforts UPS has had to go through to train and retrain 20-something employees. The article shows the adjustments, goes on a little bit about the article. To me, at least, insert a Napoleon Dynamite accent here, gosh, you're actually going to make me work attitude is really prevalent in this age group, and I've yet to pinpoint why I want to smack them around so badly for it.
I
understand job dissatisfaction runs up and down the age brackets, but I was wondering about others' opinions about this upcoming generation's work ethic. And I've heard this from others
before. I've read a few things on it, and one of the chief things, for example, our Generation X, I'm actually wondering what happens when you go past Z. What generation is that? The problem is, like, for example, when I was coming out of college, there was a lot of, or actually coming out of high school, there was a lot of concern about finding a job, period. Like, that was a time with the, you know, the kind of the mid to tail end of the recession. So a lot of people were wondering, well, you know, is there going to be a job that I can actually make a living off of and not being, you know, flipping burgers or anything? So there was a lot of angst going on where people were kind of worried that.
And you don't think people have that angst?
No, well, no, I'm not at this point, but for a lot of those kids that were
Gen Xers?
No, the Y.
Oh.
They grew up in a, well, during like,
well, the, one would think that fearing not being able to get a job would make them more willing to work hard.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
For the compared with Generation Y that came out of high school during an internet boom.
Oh,
time there was no,
you confused me. The Gen Xers are the ones that had a hard time getting
yes.
a job. That's what I was asking.
Yes.
You. Okay. Yeah.
Which I mean, okay, it's okay.
Okay.
I understand you don't always listen to me.
I'm sorry. Who are you?
Yes, exactly. So you know, at that point, you had kids. Yeah, guys like what's his name who did Facebook? He's 21. You had
Zuckerberg.
Zuckerberg. So you know, you had this kind of sky's the limit, and then you know. I don't think the reality's hit that. Hey, that was just a.
But did the dot-com boom really affect anyone outside the Bay Area?
Well, that's the thing, though. It's not so much directly. It was the impression it gave. You know what I'm saying?
Maybe.
You know, kind of the zeitgeist.
Sure.
Effect.
I'll tell you. SoCal Jess and Joe also responded to the same thing. Should I read a little bit of theirs first before I respond? SoCal Jeff said, as an almost 40-something, I've had my decent share of generational conflicts in the workplace. My Gen X colleagues have encountered similarities with respect to varying working values per generation as well. Though not all 20-somethings today have a lack of enthusiasm at doing grunt work or starting from the bottom, from what I've gauged from other Gen X professionals, the generational difference that 20-somethings today come into their first professional job with a sense of entitlement and a need of instant gratification is pretty common. I think this generational work value derives from the fact that these 20-somethings are the first generation whose formative years influenced greatly from a user-friendly internet, as well as the cultural role model shifting towards supermodels, porn stars, rap stars, etc. Joe says, in this area of instant gratification, many kids don't value or appreciate time and how it works. Many young ones get whatever they want the moment they want it. This has ingrained the thought in their heads that they don't have to work to get what they want, or that they can do whatever they want and still get paid for it. It's like they have this sense of entitlement, and when they don't get their way, they whine and say, I'll just get another job, a better one. I do know many kids where I work, and the majority of them are as lazy as a hound. Many of those kids can be smart as a whip, but without any motivation, that whip becomes more like a wet noodle. They are always, however, offset by those who give 110% and who subsequently give all of us a glimmer of hope for the future. Let's hope the next generation coming up will have learned the value of work ethic.
Well, the thing is, you can apply those same arguments to parents when they looked at, you know, the kids when we all came out.
Well, that was going to be my response, is all of this sounds like
standard generation
criticisms of Generation X, criticisms of baby boomers, criticisms of the beatniks and the kids in the 50s. I mean,
yeah, no, you get it every
I don't hear anything new here, which is kids today don't understand the value of hard work. They have a sense of entitlement. They feel like they should have it all. I think that's just generational difference.
I think the biggest change, and this goes back to what I was saying, I think there's a change in expectation. In our parents' times, Tom's and mine's, what you could do for a career was very limited because that was based on what you went to school for and what you trained for. Now you can go back. It's not uncommon for someone to go back to school.
Yeah, that is something new within the past, 30, 40 years.
And
yeah.
And you have to understand, you know, our parents went into the workforce understanding kind of the same similarity that their parents did.
Not everybody went to school back then.
No,
even,
but you
or
had
college
a job
anyway.
And
yeah.
You kind of looked at that job for life, right? It's one of those things that, yeah, I'll get my pension out of this. I'm going to put my family.
That has changed as well.
Now, I mean, it pretty much started with the 80s, but it kind of I think it really kind of took hold in our generation where you knew you wouldn't be able to keep that same job for any, maybe at most 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, you knew Social Security wasn't going to pay out.
In fact, the corporate system that we have has, in a sense, begun to reap what it has sown. I've always felt that, you know, this idea that corporations have that human resources are dispensable. You can keep the cost down by replacing them and running through them, and it's no big deal, is in the long term, and this is the problem with the way we have our system now, the long term doesn't get enough emphasis, in the long term is going to bite you in the ass. Because what you're doing is teaching, and it takes a generation or two to be taught, you're teaching that you don't owe the company anything either.
In other words,
if the company's going to treat you that way, then you're going to treat the company that way. So this particular aspect of it, this sort of like, well, I can just quit and get another job, a better job, that is exactly what corporate America has taught people, which is we will fire you eventually, or we won't value you enough to keep you, and you'll be able to go get a better job in another company, and that's the way it's supposed to work. You stay a place for 5-10 years tops, and then you jump because we won't promote you and take care of you.
Well, and that's the thing is like, and this is the problem is that corporate, especially larger ones, you have so much bureaucracy to work through. It's really hard to kind of identify. Well, that's the thing is like, it's really hard to identify talent, but when they do, you can often upset kind of the kind of tenure system that a lot of people used to expect. You know, you've been there 8 years. You're so far up the chain.
Talk about entitlement. You want to talk about some people who feel entitled? People with seniority. They don't care how good their work has been. They feel, I've been here 20 years. I am entitled to X, Y, and Z.
So
I mean, I'm not even ruling whether that's a good or a bad, but that is a sense of entitlement right there.
I mean, well, and that's the thing is, like, you know, when you start dealing with smaller and medium sized companies, they tend to value key employees. So that means, for example, maybe not the guy who actually does like the metal or does the metal work day to day, but the experienced guy who mm-hmm. oversees all of them, because he's the guy that can say, okay, this next guy that we're going to hire, he's a little shaky on this, but mm-hmm. we can train him in that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we'll get him in this. You know,
I think
I mean?
I know you're going this too, because if you look at real small offices, and I have some experience from, you know, friends and relatives back
when
in Illinois.
To, when you used to run the correspondence.
No, from
courses.
Friends and relatives back in Illinois who actually have run small businesses. They value everybody. I mean, the good ones anyway. Yeah. They value everybody, the administrative assistant, you know, everybody in the company, because it's small and because you need everybody for multiple roles and you need a lot out of everybody.
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, totally. What I've experienced is that you tend to latch, you know, the bosses or the managers, whatever, tend to latch on the people they can count on.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily that you might be the smartest or you might be the quickest. But you show the most reliability, you show the most integrity. In other words, when you say you're going to be somewhere, you're going to be there and not flake out. You know, oftentimes, you know, just on past experience, you know, you hire someone and they're really good, right? They're really good at what they do. In fact, they're probably the best you've ever seen. But they can't, you know, they can't manage a schedule.
Yeah.
They always show up late. They're either hungover.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's not what you need. You need someone you can count on.
Well, I always feel in those situations that what you need to do to that person is give them a chance to learn that skill and say, look, you know what? It depends on what the job is, obviously. Yeah. But if you say, like, look, if you can't be in before 10, but you can get the job done from 11 to 8, I'm fine. I don't care. Yeah. If it's a job that you have to be in by 9 or 10, that's different, right? So you say, but look, here's the thing. I need you to improve your time management skills, because if you're going to do that, you know, you're going to have to be able to communicate with people. You're going to have to manage delivery of your items to people at different times who need them earlier.
Sometimes it can work. Oftentimes, in my experience, I've seen people bend over backwards because you're like, oh, my God, we got to really keep this guy. We just got to kind of, you know, kind of steer him. It never works.
Well, usually there is not much training given.
It's not so much. Well,
as far as like fixing the time management and the things that need to be fixed, I almost have never seen like a real good approach to that, myself included.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I don't think that's one of those things you can.
Boy, we're getting back into the like management theory again, like we did last. We did like customer service last week. No, it's not bad. It's just funny. I mean,
well,
who knew that's where we would end up.
It's just what I found work out better is you take the reliable people and you train them on that skill. Okay, you know what? You're a little shaky at, like, say you're really shaky at making soups. We're going to go over this process.
But what if it's time management? How do you train them on that
stuff? But that's the thing. I've seen people attempt it.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what? We'll give you this schedule. You just kind of keep. It doesn't ever work because I think it's totally personality driven. You know, some people are more able to do that. That's why some people are really good at freelance.
I agree for the most part, but I do think especially younger and less experienced folks can learn good time management. They've just never been taught it. Through college, that, you know, they aren't forced to learn it. So I've seen people learn better time management. I have. But usually they teach themselves. It's not something that they get from a course. You know, maybe
it's
Franklin
one of those,
Covey
but the thing is, it's one
there,
of those make or break things where you one day wake up and it's like, I really got to start, you know, shaping up where my ass is, you know, on the lawn because I can't pay rent. Can I say that? Oh, whatever. It's not like we're G-rated.
What? Which one? Ass?
Yeah.
Well, it's a part of the body, unless you mean the burrow.
The burrow. Oh, the four-legged donkey-like thing.
Yes.
Ah, yes, yes.
The jawbone of an ass. That's a quote from the Bible.
Jawbone of an ass?
Yeah. Huh. And now I remember that from high school because we would debate whether that was a bad word or not, and somebody would always bring that up. But now I can't even remember where in the Bible that quote is from, which is bad.
Book of Ass?
The thing is, we don't have to remember these things anymore.
Yes, it's... Our collective memories have been unified into an online network.
That's why we need headsets, though, because it's faster. Judges 15:16. Then Samson said, with the jawbone of a donkey. Ah, see, it depends on which translation you get.
You know, of course.
With the jawbone of an ass, with the jaw of the colt of asses I have.
See there.
There you go.
A colt of asses.
That's what it says.
Is that what you call a baby burrow, a colt?
I guess so.
Huh. Interesting.
I have struck 1,000 men. I've slain 1,000 men. I smitten 1,000 men. Say it how you will. I did it all with the jawbone of a donkey.
Interesting. That's some weapon.
And with Judges 15:16, we shall leave you.
All right.
I don't know if we'll be able to do an episode next week or not. I'm off on vacation.
Yes.
So.
Okay.
I don't know. We could try to do one Tuesday.
Tuesday
of next week.
That's my show day, dude.
Oh yeah, yeah. We might have to skip an episode next week. But
I mean, we not skip an episode. Skip a release date.
Skip a release date. That's true. We won't actually skip an episode because the next one will be numbered sequentially.
Yes.
We promise.
The release date will just be a week off.
See you later, folks.
Bye.